True crime today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to today's episode of the program as we wrap up week three, this case, and still sit here waiting and wondering, where is this going? Is there any direction? And it feels more and more frustrating, I think, by the day. I think a lot of people feeling very frustrated by the lack of leads, the communication that we're getting from the prosecuting attorney and the police, the somewhat inconsistencies, not somewhat, the blatant inconsistencies. Take, for example, targeted, then not targeted, then targeted again, then not, and again, it's targeted, depending on who they gave the interview to at what point in the day, and they come out and say, well, you know what, there's been some miscommunication. It's just, it's got to be utterly heart-wrenching for those families to go on this roller coaster, because it's obviously they've already been through so much, and it just feels like, okay, we got something. Just kidding. A lot of frustration there. This is going to be not a super long episode, just because honestly, there's not a lot of new things to report here. And if you're a sleuth and you've been online and you've been digging into this, you're not going to get anything new here. So don't be mad. Don't be frustrated by it. We're just here to share what a lot of us have been following day to day. A lot of our listeners, not there sleuthing this out 24/7 like many of us are. So what our purpose in this is to go over things that we already know. If there is anything new to break, yeah, I mean, of course, we'd love to ask more questions, but it'll just be kind of a recap here today of what's gone on the last day or two since our last episode. And frustration, like I said, is where a lot of this is at. Steve Gonsalves, the father of the U of I murder victim, Casey Gonsalves, was asked about the progress of the Moscow PD and city prosecutor on Fox News just the other night. And this was his response.
And they keep coming out with statements that create more questions than the answer. And then that creates a pressure. And that's why I'm feeling like there's so many people coming and looking for answers. And I'm one of them.
I would agree. I think most of us would agree. I think that's why when there's this feeling that maybe the people who are in charge aren't quite getting it, others want to stand up and go, well, I'll help. And it's interesting, because I think there are a lot of people thoroughly investigating this case on the professional side, on the side of the police, on the side of the FBI. There are a lot of state resources that are going into this beyond just the Moscow PD. But when it comes, I think, to the figureheads that are speaking to the public about this, not necessarily the folks that are behind the scenes scraping for the DNA, scraping for this and that, those aren't the ones that are speaking. We have more of, I think, a PR issue going on here with the Moscow PD and the prosecuting attorney than we actually do with the investigation of the case, is my opinion. Because if you watch it, they're doing a lot of things. Now, the order in which everyone can sit back and you know, armchair quarterback at going, well, why didn't they do this thing? Why didn't they do that there? And your guess is as good as mine. Sometimes we sit and go, well, maybe there's a greater thought process to this than what, you know, we're all processing on this end. One would hope at the end of the day, all the pressure, all of the eyes being on this, I think will help to avoid more mistakes, because they're being watched thoroughly. So there's not a lot of room for somebody to get behind on something or do something improperly. But how much improperly was done at the very beginning, I think, is another big question a lot of people have. When Steve was asked further about his opinion on Fox News yesterday if he had any opinions on a specific suspect. He had this to say.
I do have some inkling that there was some behavior difference. I call them a footprint. When you commit a crime, you do different behaviors. I've asked permission to give any of that out, and they told me no, it would not be beneficial. So I've held back on that, and I tried to keep my word.
I'm sorry, behavior of her or someone she knew?
Behavior of the victims.
That's interesting to me, and a lot of people are speculating about that online. He's not saying that he observed or someone observed a individual, a suspect acting differently. He's more so saying the girls were acting differently prior to this happening. I would read into that it pertains to some sort of a relationship, and I'm not saying romantic, meaning just a relationship with another human being, friends, acquaintances, whatever it may be, that maybe made them have a little bit of pause, a little bit of caution around someone, is what I'm gathering out of that. Again, just speculation. But I'm wondering if there was some sort of stressor in some sort of relationship or communication with another individual that made them feel that way. The most confusing thing many of us have been reading into this is again, the Moscow PD, the prosecuting attorney, seeming to contradict each other left and right in public statements, in interviews. And it all goes around the word targeting and relationship to grievance. The latest from the Moscow police, as of our recording, is this statement. We remain consistent in our belief that this was a targeted attack, but investigators have not concluded if the target was the residents or if it was the occupants. More confusion, essentially, there. Because one starts to wonder, well, if it's the target of the residents, does that mean they just showed up and wanted to kill whoever happened to be in the residence as some sort of revenge or some sort of statement to the owner of the property? What is the significance of it being a residence being the target? So we wanted to dig into that a little bit more and find out what exactly is the definition of targeting according to the FBI relationship to grievance. And I'm just going to read you exactly what it says on their website. This is not in reference to the case here specifically. This is just getting down to the definition. And maybe this will make it a little more clear. Maybe this will make it a little more gray. This is what it says. With enough information and sometimes logical deduction, potential targets of a person of concern can be identified. Additional targets may be actually or symbolically associated with those individuals. Opportunistic victims may be targeted at the time of the offense for any number of reasons, including convenience and availability, high visibility, potential for maximum shock value, or because the desired target is unavailable. In some cases, it may be difficult or impossible to pinpoint a relationship between grievance and targeting, even with the benefit of hindsight. For example, one assailant violently offended against the crowd at a suburban movie theater. No associations between the offender and the theater or between the offender and any of the 82 casualties were ever identified. An offender may target locations rather than specific individuals. Choices can include locations where activity related to the grievance unfolded, school, workplace, shopping mall, where a very specific class of person spend time. Other times it's less clear. Some offenders have been chosen locations that were successful, perhaps for the last time. Sometimes the target ultimately selected may not be a first choice, but rather one which is vulnerable and accessible, One offender returned to his old classroom building at his former university and assaulted a class in session with multiple firearms. He had no association with any of the victims. However, he had spent much of a highly successful undergraduate career in that building before beginning a period of repeated life failures. Logically, this targeting may make little sense to the rational observer. However, it apparently made sense to him. Well, he never articulated a grievance or violent ideation towards the students he hurt and killed. He had demonstrated a cluster of concerning risk factors and warning behaviors before the event. And learning point from a case like this may be that grievance may occasionally not be evident, but nonetheless, threat managers should focus on accelerating pattern of warning behaviors. How those behaviors may be influenced by risk factors and whether mitigating or mitigators are available to support the person of concern. A little more in-depth way of looking at it, and in those examples seems to make some sense. In this case, does he have a connection to the house? Did something happen in the house? Not necessarily with these people. I don't know that that is necessarily the relationship to grievance. What I have been saying for quite a while early on in this, on the profile of the individual, is the grievance may not even be with any of these girls specifically. Or if it is, I don't think the girls were necessarily super aware of the grievance or the offender's deep-rooted hate and vile instincts that they had. What I'm speaking of is, I'm wondering if this is someone who, like I said earlier, incel, that sort of an individual. That's a young man. And we are talking incel. It often means they're connected to an online group that further stokes their beliefs that they are not attractive to women, they can't attract women, that women are to blame. It's basically women hating and never growing up and going, maybe there's a reason women don't like you. Maybe it's the way you treat them. Maybe it's this deep down fear that you have of them and your own insecurities that turns people off. And then in turn, it makes it difficult for you to have those relationships that maybe, you know, if you worked on that, it doesn't have to be this way. But rather than working on it, they assimilate to others and go, well, this, we're like a group and they're wrong for rejecting us. And some of those people can get really fucking crazy and really violent. And I wonder if that is the type of person we're dealing here with. Where maybe it's just an acquaintance. Maybe this is someone who, you know, knows there's a couple of pretty girls that live in this house together. He has a hatred for pretty girls who he views as rejecting him or he's not good enough for, and lashes out. Maybe there was some sort of rejection at some point. I'm not talking anything major here. I'm just talking one of them saying, no, I'm not interested in going to the party with you, or whatever it may be. Because I'm busy constantly. It's just things that happen, life, the things that people have rights to say no to. And then things that people can't cope with very well anymore. If I were to guess the profile of the individual, again, this is all speculation. My guess is we're going to find it somebody like that. Could be completely off. But based on what we're seeing so far and the confusion, I don't think this is necessarily going to be, oh yeah, him, they were so close. I don't think we're going to see that at the end of this. Because the investigations into the people thus far that have been close have been very inconclusive. Or flat out, you know, conclusive to the point of there's no way this person did this. Everything that was looked at initially, was it the roommates? Was it the boyfriend? Was it the neighbor? They've all checked out pretty good. In fact, after being deemed a suspect, Jeremy Reagan, who was lambasted over online social media posts, people claiming that they believe he might be the one because he acts a little different. And he, to me, and I don't know if he has this, but he acts kind of Asperger's-ish, which I get because I'm kind of that same way too, where you're just a little socially awkward. You talk a little bit too much. You want to help a little bit too much. And then sometimes that looks suspicious when you're really just doing everything you can to clear yourself and to help those out there. That's what I get off of the read of Jeremy. In fact, he just the other night, without the asking of police, which I'm kind of surprised by, I'm surprised all of the people in this circle, every single person has not submitted DNA yet, just to be sure, just to have it, just declare it. Why have they not collected this yet? Jeremy actually went down to the police station himself and said, take my DNA. This is what he had to say to Ashley Banfield on News Nation last night.
They actually didn't reach out to me. I just decided it's easier for me just to be proactive. And so yesterday I just went to the police station. I walked in, I said, here's my name, I'm Jeremy Reagan. Yesterday I was talked to by the police. The two officers that had interviewed me weren't there, but a different officer was like, all right, give me just a second. So he went, grabbed one of the mouth swabs, came, took me into one of the rooms there, did a mouth swab and said, all right, you're good to go. And so, yeah, I just went in. They never contacted me. I just figured it's easier to just try and be proactive and just get it all out of the way sooner rather than later.
Good for him. It's another moment where it makes a lot of us go, why did they not already get this from you? In turn, makes you kind of question our confidence in the investigation itself. Why there's so many things that really do look like they're, you watch the videos, if you watch people in that house and the way that they were collecting evidence after the fact, I mean, going into this for weeks, wouldn't that have been something that they would have done immediately, asking for that DNA from everybody just to let's get a baseline here of who we know everybody is, where there's likely to be DNA from people that have nothing to do with the murder, what your DNA is, so we don't have to just constantly guess at this. I did see some reporting yesterday that DNA evidence is likely to start trickling in after review, because a lot of that does take time to be processed, compared, and it's a several week process, but some of it apparently is starting to come in. So hopefully we'll start to see some new developments there, at least in narrowing down or being able to clearly state this person's not involved, that person's not involved, and surely do so, even though many of these people have complete legit alibis and proof that they were not there at the time. Everyone's just digging. Everyone is digging and looking under every stone that they possibly can, and still we sit here with not many answers. 3 weeks in at this moment in time to this absolutely tragic case. So that's the latest as of this broadcast. Of course, we're watching this very closely, and when we have breaking updates, we'll post them for you. Like this, it's just a shorter version of the show, just to give you something if you're not, like I said, sitting there absorbing this 24/7, which good for you, because you it's easy to get sucked into this and just really want to dig and dig and dig. We'll be the voice here that can kind of give you the points that have been talked about and answer some of the questions that you may have of what is currently going on with this horrible case in the podcast here, Four Killed for What, the University of Idaho Murders Podcast. Be sure to press subscribe wherever it is that you are listening to this podcast so you don't miss any of those breaking updates or new episodes as we post them. Four Killed for What is a production of Real Story Media in association with our other podcast, True Crime Today. You can follow True Crime Today for more on this story and other stories around the country. Just search True Crime Today wherever you download podcasts. Until next time, for all of us here, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.